This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. And we have a special guest with us today. That is none other than Greg Huss of CubsInsider.com and the Growing Cubs podcast, covering all things in the Cubs minor league system. Greg has been on the show before, and we thought, while we have, at least for now, a brief period of peace in terms of the Cubs breaking our hearts or trading players that we know and love, we would take a look at the future. Jed Hoyer has used that phrase a lot, that while they intend to compete in 2021, the eye is toward the future. So we figured, what better way to discuss that than someone who has a much stronger working knowledge of the Cubs system than certainly me, and I think also Brendan. But Greg, welcome back. We're happy to have you here.
Thanks, guys. It's a good sign that I'm on, because that means that nothing big has happened with the Cubs, and that means that Chris Bryant and Wilson Contreras are still with the Cubs, right?
Well, we may have to kick you off
for now.
That trade gets announced during this.
I may have just jinxed
it. We'll see.
Yeah, that is something that we have to monitor. And if you've listened to this podcast for any period of time, you know that it's not an uncommon occurrence, even during the regular season, that Brendan and I will record a podcast and then something happens like the next morning, whether it's somebody getting DFA'd or sent down or injured or anything like that, that we just spent 30 minutes breaking down the night before, that is now completely useless. So hopefully that doesn't happen, though I think a good substance of this conversation will be useful no matter what. The only thing that could happen is we won't talk about new prospects if something does happen in that time. But where I want to start, Greg, I think this is a pretty obvious place to start. Brendan and I have broken down the Yu Darvish trade and that whole situation in multiple ways. We did so like 20 minutes after learning that it was going to happen in a unfiltered and, you know, sort of raw emotion kind of way. Then last week, after we had heard from Jed Hoyer, got a little more context on the situation, why it went down the way it did, why it was that package, why it was the Padres, things like that. So now that we are a few weeks removed from that happening, we've all had time to kind of heal from that experience. As Jed Hoyer has said a lot, the eye is toward the future. The team wants to compete in 2021, but the eye is toward the future. He's talked about that in terms of big free agent spending, in terms of trades that they're looking at. The eye for this organization is not on the 2021 season. When he says future, we're not exactly positive what that means or when the baseball budget will tick back up to where we'd all like it to be, but the eye is toward the future, whatever that means. So I think the easiest place to start, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, Greg, and ask you to make us feel better about the Yu Darvish trade or justify it completely or anything like that, but we've litigated the trade, we've litigated the motivation, and it happened. This is what they did. This is the direction that they're going. So I just want to see if you can offer, and I know that a lot of these guys are 18, 19, and have literally not played professional baseball. We're coming off a pandemic season where there wasn't a full minor league system, et cetera. But what information you have, what information you've been able to glean from other scout sources, et cetera, on the return that the Cubs got, and if you can kind of put into perspective for us and the listeners what these four prospects do to the Cubs system. How does it change anything? These guys are all young, but what does this do for the outlook, at least right now, as this is the only move we've seen so far?
I thought you guys wanted me to talk about Zach Davies on here. I'm confused. No.
yeah, sorry.
No, I think you brought up a good point that these guys, I mean, are so, so young. And, I mean, I people have probably seen it elsewhere, but there's only 77 games total played as professionals between the four prospects the Cubs got. And all 77 of those were by one guy. So there's not a whole lot of experience. There's not a whole lot to go off of. With that being said, there are videos of these guys out there. There's plenty of scouting reports from Baseball America and other MLB pipeline, things like that. I think what, in general, what the Cubs got from this trade and these prospects was a whole lot of athleticism, which is not something that the system is kind of crawling with right now. I mean, we were just before we started recording, we were talking about Jordan Wogu. And obviously there's a whole lot of athleticism there and a whole lot of athleticism with Brennan Davis, but as a whole, there's not a whole lot of quick twitch athletes in the system. And with a couple of these guys, that's exactly what you're getting. I think that, it's important to see that the lower levels of the system are really, really loaded with a lot of high upside potential players. Now, when you get a return like this and a trade for Yu Darvish and Vic Caratini in Reggie Preciado and Ismael Mania and Yasin Santana and Owen Casey, those are the four guys, obviously there's potential for them to all be great, great players. But there's also a possibility they fizzle out in Double-A. I mean, that's what you get from players that are still 17 and 18 years old. I mean, Yasin Santana is the oldest player of the bunch, and he's still only 20. So there's athleticism, there is high upside, but there's also a lot of risk. And I guess that was why there was a lot of uproar when this trade was completed as to, oh, the Cubs blew it. The Cubs made a bad trade. And it's possible that they did, but it's too soon to tell. And I think that the anger, and from me included, comes from this doesn't really help the team in this year, in next year, or maybe even the year after, right? This is a 2024, 2025 type trade. And that's we saw it from Jed Hoyer. We saw it from different guys. Like, this is a different timeline.
So among the four guys they got back in that prospect category, I think the most content available was on Owen Casey. He was a second round draft pick, a big guy out of Canada. Fangraphs has him listed at 6'4", 190 right now. Of the four guys, is Owen Casey maybe the one that has the most obvious tools? I mean, the power looks like it's kind of off the charts, but some of the scouting reports suggested that his swing might be a little bit too long and in need of refinement. What do you think of Owen Casey? And if it's not Owen Casey, who's, I guess, kind of the big guy in that four package return, is there anyone else that you think may have a better chance of being productive in a shorter timeline?
Yeah, I think that Owen Casey's power is one of the tools that is clearly there. I mean, you know, with Reggie Preciado, the tools aren't really as clear with a young guy like that. We've seen the power from Owen Casey. So, like, we know that that's there. He put up some just absurd exit velo numbers at all the camps that he went to pre-draft. And I've seen a lot of things where it's talked about he has a really long swing, and I've seen some videos, and I don't see the long swing quite as much.
I
saw a pretty short, compact swing. Now, he's a big, long guy, so I think you could expect a long swing, but I don't really see that in his swing. So, on the other end of the spectrum, there's been a lot of talk about his plus speed and that he's super athletic, and he might be, but from what I've seen from the videos, now granted, I would take this with a grain of salt because I've only seen so many videos, but I think that the swing is pretty short into the ball, and I think that his speed and athleticism aren't really there to stay. I don't see him sticking in center field. I think that he's a corner outfielder, hopefully, and hopefully a pretty good one, but I don't see him being a center fielder at all by the way that he runs. So I think that his power, like back to the question you asked, I think his power is the most notable of all of these tools from these players that we've seen. But at the same time, like Ismael Mania is he's a really good, like he's really fast, and a lot of people are saying that he's really good defensive skills. So those aren't like skills that pop off quite as much as like Owen Casey's power, but those are loud, noticeable skills too that Mania has.
Do you expect Casey to be someone who can kind of go through the system faster? I know, you know, he's a teenager, right? So it's hard to project at this point. But looking around and seeing, you know, how some of these younger guys kind of go through the systems these days, is there a lot of room for just accelerated development, especially given that, you know, we had a COVID timeline, he was drafted in a COVID year. He may have been, who knows, in a better position to be drafted if not for COVID. Do you think someone who's going to go on a traditional timeline, or do you think his skill set is in need of refinement that could be, you know, 4 years away?
Yeah, I don't see him moving too quickly. He's a guy from Canada, and you see a lot of, I mean, like high schoolers from like northern states and I guess northern countries, right? Is like those guys don't move quickly through the system. So I wouldn't expect him to move up pretty quick. But I also don't see him working really slow. I think the guy that we could potentially see in Chicago, if we're talking that route first of any of these guys, is Jason Santana, who is the 20-year-old, and I think that he probably begins the year in South Bend in high A to start 2021. I mean, there's a possibility in Myrtle Beach, but I think he will be with a full season affiliate when the season begins, partially because he's the oldest of the bunch, partially because he actually has professional games under his belt. But I think that Santana is the quickest potentially to Chicago, but I think that he is more of like a utility guy. I don't see him being like an everyday regular type of player. But when I was talking quick twitch, Jason Santana is the guy that really stands out as like quick twitch athlete. When he plays shortstop, there's a lot of like the lateral quickness is there. He just looks really smooth out there, and I think that's because of his athleticism.
So, Greg, when you, and again, working with the information that you have, when you look at this, like again, we know that some of the motivation here is obviously financial constraints from ownership. We know that some, you know, we've discussed the motivation, right? So just sort of accepting all of that and taking it as what it is. When Jed talked about this trade, he, you know, and other members of the media kind of broke down what happened here and how this happened. It sounded a lot like the Cubs needed to move money. They wanted to move Darvish given his age and, you know, that his value was at its peak. And all these other reasons, and this was the offer, right? It wasn't really a door number one, door number two, door number three situation. It was more of a here's door number one, that's it. Given all of that, do you look at this and are you pleased with this return? Do these four guys add something significant to this system? Or, you know, I guess what I'm asking is, once we had all the context and we kind of understand why this move happened and, you know, just sort of like accepting the details of what Jed was working with here, do you feel better about this? Do you feel okay about this? Or are you still looking at this and kind of like, yeah, these guys are talented, but I'm just not seeing it?
Ask me again if I'm happy.
Are you happy?
No.
Okay.
No, it's kind of a loaded question a little bit, but I just think that the way I look at this trade is that I understand trading Yu Darvish. He's going to be in his age 35 season. He's a pitcher. He is at his peak value coming off the second in the Cy Young. I understand trading him. The other thing is I think the prospects that the Cubs got back are real decent pieces. I think that those prospects are potential top 10 guys in the Cubs system, all four of them. But at the same time, it was shocking to me that the Cubs went about collecting these players that are all lower minor, not only lower minors, but like like Arizona League. Like they're all teenagers, right? I was surprised that they went about it that way, and they didn't get some guys that are younger, some guys that are closer to Chicago, some guys that are middle of the pack, and they also didn't get any pitchers. And I know that, I mean, we can talk about the Cubs' lack of pitching development all day, but it just to get four players and none of them be any arms, it was just surprising. And now I don't, the Cubs front office knows more than we do in terms of these players, because I don't know what type of data, what type of information is being shared from instructs for these players, from fall instructs, or from just anything else that the front office has their hands on that we don't. But I think that they could have had a much more diverse return for Yu Darvish and Vic Caratini. The fact that they threw in Caratini into this mix, I feel like just keeps getting tossed to the side. But like Caratini is a decent backup, and now the Cubs are sitting there with no backup catcher.
Right.
I think that the return could have been a little bit different. Not necessarily better, because these prospects might be great in the long run, but we just won't know until 2025.
You brought up the catching situation, so I wanna move on to now. We've spoken the gospel about Brendan Davis on this podcast a lot. We've interviewed Brendan Davis on this podcast, so I in no way mean to push him to the side or anything like that. But I want to talk about who, at least from my vantage point, is the most exciting person in this system. And correct me if you feel I'm wrong in this, but at least at this moment, as we sit here in January, Miguel Amaya. And a lot of that comes from, his performance in the minors, his prospect rankings and things like that, but also just a really dominant performance, as we talked about on here before, in the Winter League in Puerto Rico, where he is putting up, in the 10 games there, a couple homers, 11 RBIs, and an on-base percentage over 500. So, given that we're talking catchers, given that, the Cubs' current starting catcher is one of the more prominent names we keep hearing in the trade rumors, talk to us just a little bit about Miguel Amaya. And I think, if you can, a little bit in that context, not necessarily comparing him to Wilson Contreras or, trying to justify, go ahead and move Contreras because we've got Amaya. Not necessarily like that, but Contreras' name is out there. It was out there again today in a report about the Miami Marlins. He continues. It sort of fluctuates between him and Chris Bryant, which name on the Cubs is the most frequently brought up by writers and reporters in terms of their hearing in trade talks, things like that. So if you can just kind of give us some perspective on the kind of prospect that Amaya is, his timeline, and, where maybe like a more realistic projection of just like what exactly the Cubs have here and what Cubs fans can expect from his development and what you might be expecting of him once he gets to the majors.
I'll start off with the reasons to be, I guess, critical of Miguel Amaya, because after that, I'm just going to go off on how amazing he is. But I guess to start off, Miguel Amaya hasn't had a plate appearance above A-ball. Like he hasn't even appeared in Tennessee or Iowa in AA or AAA yet. So I feel like the expectations, the further we get along in this winter, where he's getting a whole lot of love in the in Puerto Rico, and the Cubs traded away Vic Caratini, and they're potentially trading away Wilson Contreras, and I feel like he's getting a lot of love, and Miguel Amaya deserves to have a lot of love. But it's important to remember that like he still has development still to go. He is a catcher that hasn't played above A-ball, and that is, he did great in A-ball, but it's important to remember that as a part of his development. He's not ready for Chicago yet. He will probably start the year in Double-A Tennessee. I know that it was discussed that Miguel Amaya and Braylon Marquez and Brendan Davis will all three start in Tennessee, which that's going to be a fun roster. But I think he starts in Tennessee and then makes his way up to Iowa about halfway through the year. And I think he ends in Iowa. I don't even really see, unless he kills it, I don't see him making it up to Chicago in 2021 at all. So we can look at 2022 as the year for Miguel Amaya, even the year for Miguel Amaya to start 2022 as the starting catcher in Chicago, potentially, if it comes to that with Wilson Contreras gone. But I just think that we got to temper our expectations while also watching all the crazy good things he's doing and getting a little excited just like down under, you know what I mean? And I think that the part that excites me the most about Miggy Amaya is that he is a defense-first catcher. His receiving skills have been applauded by a lot of the different pitchers he's worked with down in the minors. He has a cannon of an arm, and his actual blocking skills have improved greatly over the past couple of years. So that defense is what initially put him on people's radars, and it's the power that's coming now. It's the power that he showed in Myrtle Beach in 2019 in a park that's really, really hard to hit home runs, really, really hard to hit for power. And he showed that a little bit in Myrtle Beach, and then he's shown it more and more through the alternate site and then through down in Puerto Rico in the Winter League now. So he's still developing that power. He's still developing his bat as a whole. But there's obviously a whole lot to be excited about once he potentially makes it up to Chicago.
Greg, so one standout metric for Amaya that caught my attention, and it caught my attention because I kind of looked at the same thing with Eloy Jimenez a few years ago, and that metric is his strikeout to walk ratio at high A. And if we look at those who are under 20 years old in high A in 2019, Amaya had the best strikeout to walk ratio. He's the only one actually in a qualified sample to have a walk rate over 10% and a strikeout rate under 18%. And at that age, you know, pretty impressive stuff. And so that stood out to me because Eloy Jimenez also had that same type of portfolio at that particular time in his development. But we've seen Eloy since that time with the White Sox kind of develop into more of a guy who whiffs and mm-hmm. misses more pitches than not. So my question to you, with that in mind, and given some of the information we've heard about Miguel Amaya changing his contact point a little bit, similar to what we saw with David Bote a few years ago, do you see Amaya turning more so into a power guy and sacrificing some contact? Or do you think he is like this catcher who's not going to strike out that much?
That's interesting because I'd have to look back at some of Jimenez's stats and numbers before he reached high A because... Mm-hmm. Amaya is a guy that has, each year that he's been in the Cubs system, each year he's lowered his strikeout rate, each year he's raised his walk rate. And so those numbers are getting closer and closer together, which is exactly what you want to see. And while doing that, his power has played up each and every year. Now, the slugging numbers weren't great in 2019 because he was in Myrtle Beach, which is impossible to hit there. But how he's looked with the power has gotten better and better each year. So I can see him continuing to develop more as a power bat without giving up some of those contact skills moving forward. Now, it depends on how he's using that point of contact and how he plans on deploying that in his at-bats. Is he using that as a way to attack pitches early in the count, or is he using that as an A swing versus a B swing or a C swing, or is he just using that in sort of a David Bote way that we're seeing it throughout in a bat? You know, there's a difference in right. how you deploy that swing and that point of contact. But
have you seen any differences? Like, I know looking, it's hard to find some video from the Puerto Rican League, but have you noticed anything different from when he was, you know, in high A about a year and a half ago to now? Is anything like popping out, or is it basically, you know, the exact same?
I have noticed in Pat. So when he was in Myrtle Beach, he would get the ball out front a lot he would pull the ball a lot. And the weird thing with that is that he has plenty of power to go to dead center and go opposite field with his power. I think that letting the ball travel a little bit more actually would probably benefit him a little bit because you would see him rolling over on the ball a lot. But that also could be part of a launch angle thing where he needs to be hitting the ball just in the air as he's pulling it more than rolling over on the ball to shortstop and third base. I haven't seen any notable things when looking at old video compared to now, but I also haven't dug in too deep on that.
Hey everyone, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms that you listen to us on. And the best part is you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as really any other hosting site would charge you just for, you know, initially setting it up. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you just want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, just go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. So I know he's going to probably, correct me if I'm wrong here, he's going to be starting in Tennessee, right? Is that the plan for him? Okay, so let's say, like, you know, in a perfect world, it's the middle of June. And I know you said, like, hey, he's probably going to be here 22, but in a perfect world, he's ripping up Tennessee. It's mid-June. Cubs backup catcher situation, not the best. Let's say they can maybe utilize Wilson in left field because we didn't sign anyone besides Nick Martini. In a perfect world, do you think the Cubs would even take that chance of promoting him this year if the competition at Tennessee is so underneath what he's currently doing? And do you see him even maybe like skipping Iowa if that's the case?
I guess it kind of depends on the state of the Cubs at the time. Like, if the Cubs are competing, I think that it helps him a lot that he's a good defensive catcher, and so you're not just bringing him up for his bat, because you know he can hang back behind the plate too, and that makes a big, big difference in being able to get called up to Chicago quicker than we kind of expect, you know? I think that for catchers especially, I'm a believer that in catchers especially benefit a ton from playing in AAA, because in AAA, you have such a mix of different types of players. You get a lot of MLB vets that are playing in AAA. So you'll get all these minor league signings that we're seeing over the past month that the Cubs have just loaded up on. A lot of those guys are going to be in AAA. So for Miguel Amaya to get experience catching some of those major league like type arms in AAA would make a huge difference in his development, I think, before he makes it to Chicago. Now, if the Cubs are in the middle of a playoff chase, he's absolutely destroying the ball. By the end of the year, I mean, I think that how can you justify not bringing him up if they're in the middle of a playoff chase and he's killing it? You know, I think that it's not like you're pulling up a guy from high A, or you're pulling up a guy that just looks completely overmatched and you're just like praying that he takes off. You know, like this is a different situation. Now, if the Cubs are around 500 or below, and I just think you just write him out at Iowa.
So, Greg, kind of along these same lines, I figure we might as well rope in Braylon Marquez into this conversation, just as he's another one of those guys that maybe has that quicker timeline, I guess, to Chicago, as we, you know, we saw him in the 2020 season for a brief moment there. Any along the same lines as Amaya, like what do you think is the plan for him in 2021? I know, again, similarly, there's discussion of whether we see him in 2021. But again, you know, kind of looking at everything through the lens of not 2021, the future, what would be your ideal sort of path for Braylon and where you'd like to see him develop this year so that he's well positioned for whenever that future is?
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded, and the best golfers sometimes three putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you've been coming up short in the health department, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for hair loss or ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is forward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated now to get $15 off your first month. That's $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED or hair loss. Go to GetRoman.com/CubsRelated. Get started now to save $15 off your first month of treatment.
I'd love to see Marquez start in Tennessee in the starting rotation, make his way up to Iowa starting rotation when he gets close to hitting that innings limit, which he's going to hit because guys are coming off a year that was so – and we've seen that. I mean, I know that the Cubs front office and everybody across baseball is saying, like, starting pitchers aren't going to get all the innings in that they typically get because of the weird year last year.
Greg, what do you think that innings limit will be? Like a range, like 100, 120? What are we looking at there?
I don't know. Just with the strange year last year, I don't know. I mean, I think that a guy like Marquez typically going into this type of season for him would be like 150-ish, 140-ish.
Okay.
But you're coming off a year where he didn't get that number of innings, like close to that number of innings last year. So I don't know how the development staff sees that playing out, especially with minor league arms in 2021. But I would love to see him, as he approaches that innings limit as a starter in the minors, then get the bump up to Chicago to be able to use that fastball-slider combination out of the bullpen. Because I think that he's a guy that obviously can play in the bullpen and doesn't need to be in the starting rotation when he gets up to Chicago. So I think develop him as a starter in the minor leagues this year, the upper levels that he hasn't experienced yet. Like Miguel Amaya, Braylon Marquez hasn't seen a level above high A ball that's not called Chicago. You know, he hasn't been to Tennessee or Iowa. So get that experience as a starter at the upper levels, and then break out the 100-plus mile-an-hour fastball in Chicago by the end of the year.
Marquez, he's fascinating just in the fact that he's a big lefty who throws 100. He's extra fascinating. Yeah, it's always fun. But he's extra fascinating because I think he's the prototype and kind of the very first big pitching prospect that Craig Breslow has to work with. And we've seen since the second half of 2019, basically two relatively big changes. The first one is he started using a changeup that was improved in the second half of 2019. And then just recently during the minor league camp in South Bend in his COVID year, they started implementing more of a sinker with him. And so that's just beyond fascinating for me because, as you said, he's a fastball breaking pitch guy. Right. And we want him to be, you know, a starting pitcher. But the way I've kind of tried to figure out what they're doing that's unique compared to other systems. And the one area, and I keep talking about this, but I'm kind of obsessed with it. It seems like Breslow and Tommy Hotovy, they're developing or promoting more usage of two seamers and sinkers. And they're almost kind of counterintuitively using those two seamers and sinkers up in the zone. And we saw that even with Adber Alzolay, who developed that sinker last year, and Quintana and Hendricks, they're throwing sinkers up in the zone. And that's just like weird to me. So I bring this back to Marquez. Do you think that like he could just eventually turn into that changeup sinker guy? Or is he more so than likely going to be just your strict heavy four seamer, follow up with that heavy breaking pitch, and then sprinkle in those changeups and two-seamers?
Yeah, I mean, typically I would defer to you, Brendan, on a lot of the pitch development type of deal. But I, based off what I've seen from Braylon Marquez, now I don't know how the way that he throws, the way that his arm slot is, the way he comes kind of almost sidearm with his delivery.
Yeah.
I think that having that four-seam fastball works really well. And we've seen the slider in the minor leagues work well when it's on. It's always been about his command. Okay. And the changeup was actually, in 2019, the changeup had flashes where it looked really good. Really, really good arm side fade on it. But it was just, he could not command it at all.
Now, is it command overall or just on that one pitch? Is this like a general global command issue that he has?
It's a little bit of a overall command, yes, but I think with the changeup it was especially absent. But the fastball and slider was the command was there a little bit more. It very clearly with his pitches, the command is very clearly he commands the fastball pretty well. He commands the slider below average, and then he just could not command the changeup in 2019. That doesn't mean that the pitch wasn't a good pitch. It just meant he couldn't command it. And the move to the sinker is strange to me. I know that that's been the way that this development staff has worked, and maybe it does work out. I guess more times than not, I defer to you on some of that pitch development and how that works. But we saw it work with Adbert Ausleit. Those are two completely different pitchers. And I'll tell you that I actually like. I mean this. I'd actually prefer Adbert Ausleit, or I guess I'd bet on Adbert Ausleit in the starting rotation in Chicago for years moving forward over Braylon Marquez. I just think that
really,
I think that what Adbert Ausleit did last year just really, really impressed me. I think that at this point, going into 2020, for me, Ausleit was, I don't think he had enough quality pitches to be a starter, and I didn't think that the durability was there. And the first point was just completely, in my eyes, blown out of the water. I think that he does have the repertoire to remain as a starter and the right mix of pitches to remain a starter. Now it's still just the durability. We need to make sure he can stay healthy in that amount of innings at the major league level. But I really, really like Ausleit as a starter now. Not that I don't like Marquez as a starter. I think that he could, if those pitches all develop, he obviously could be a really, really good starter moving forward. I just know that he has that good fastball, that great fastball, and then a good slider to go with it. And that works in the pen for sure.
Yeah, I'm kind of like imagining, and you know, maybe this is just kind of like a fairy tale land over here, but let's say the Cubs do have a chance to compete for this terrible division, which is, you know, on paper right now, pretty bad. Seeing Marquez out of the pen, kind of piggybacked by Broke Haraway, would be would be pretty fun to watch. Like, you think Broke Haraway could have a chance to come up towards the second half?
Yeah, I think that Burl kind of has a similar path. What I just explained with Marquez, except Burl doesn't ever pitch as a starter in the minors. I think that starting in Tennessee, moving up to Iowa, and then potentially finishing the year in Chicago is a very real possibility with Burl. I'm looking at the potential pitching staff for Tennessee to start off the year, and you do have Braylon Marquez, who can touch 100 with his fastball. You got Burl Caraway, who could touch 100 with his fastball. There's a potential that Michael McAveen starts the year in Tennessee, and if he's as a reliever, his fastball can touch 100. There's a lot of velo in the minors now, and that wasn't the case 3 years ago. Even that was not the case, having all this velocity in the minor leagues. And now you kind of see it at every single level. You're going to see it in 2021. And that's so exciting to me. It's so exciting to see the Cubs actually having guys and a lot of dudes that actually can hit triple digits with their fastball.
While we're on the topic of some of these current guys, one thing I want to ask you about that, and then when we're through that, get back to the off season in more of a broad, sort of abstract way. But looking at 2021 and looking at the guys that the Cubs currently have in their system as of this moment on Tuesday night, again, we're kind of prepared for that to change maybe at any time. When if we are not going to be going all in 2021, even at this point, a lot of the reports don't suggest that the Cubs are even going to make modest improvements, you know, in the free agent market or anything like that. If it happens, it might be minimal, right? So if we're using this to compete in a bad division, which, as Brendan mentioned, and as we reiterate 1,000 times on this podcast, is really, really, really bad. Who are some names of guys, you know, not amongst the ones that we brought up, that you would like to see get an opportunity in 2021? And not just because the opportunity is there and you might have some holes to fill, but if we can use 2021 as an opportunity to give guys a shot that then you're able to capitalize on and have them as part of the rotation, the bullpen, the lineup, the bench, whatever, for 2022. Who are some of those guys that you think could get those opportunities? And are there any guys who maybe aren't on that immediate radar? You know, we hear names like Corey Abbott and Tyson Miller a lot, but any guys who maybe aren't as much on that radar that you're of the belief, like, if we're screwing around a little bit in 2021, we really ought to give this guy a shot because we might unearth something that then we've got, you know, cheap, controlled, young talent going forward, but we may not know that unless they really get an honest shot.
Yeah, his name's Corey Abbott, and he should have been talked about as a number five starter, like, yesterday. I just think that Corey Abbott is, there's a lot of pitchers at the AAA and AA level that can be given an opportunity in Chicago, regardless of how bad or good the Cubs are in 2021. And I think Corey Abbott is just the top of that list. I think, because I believe in what he has the most of those guys. He's killed. He was the Cubs minor league pitcher of the year in 2019, and that was just more of the same for him. Like, he's killed it everywhere he's gone. He doesn't have the Braylon Marquez fastball. He doesn't have the Burl Caraway curveball. But he, better than anyone else in the system that I've seen, tunnels just incredibly well. He has a really, really good put-away pitch with his cutter and slider. I really like Corey Abbott, and I think that even as of right now, the Cubs don't have a fifth starter. And I think that right now, Corey Abbott could win that job with the roster how it is as it stands on today on January 12th. And I think that, like I said, I think that he's an example, but you have Corey Abbott, you have Tyson Miller, Keegan Thompson, Jack Patterson. There's a lot of Justin Steele. There's a lot of guys that, I mean, I could go on and on, and I think I have, I don't know if it was on your podcast or on my own or wherever, on Twitter, everywhere probably, that the Cubs just have not given their starting pitchers in the minor leagues a shot.
Right.
And I get that there's been this window of contention where they can't really afford to trust these minor leaguers, I guess, coming up and getting significant amount of starts in Chicago. But at some point, you got to trust these guys to be able to do it. And when Corey Abbott performs as well as he does in Tennessee and below that in Myrtle Beach and South Bend, that's a guy that you have to give a shot. And you can't just keep letting these guys like Tyson Miller. Tyson Miller coming up and making, what, three appearances in 2020? Mm-hmm. That can't be the only amount of appearances that he gets in Chicago. They can't say, all right, well, we gave you a shot. You weren't great. Let's move on. We'll trade you. We'll release you. We'll DFA you, whatever. That can't happen with these guys, especially in the era of Cubs baseball that we're potentially going into. So some of these guys need to click. Corey Abbott needs to click, or Tyson Miller. Of those five names or so, somebody has to be a long-term starter in Chicago, and you got to try them out. You got to see who works, and not only try them out, but give them an extended shot of trying out. I can't stand when the Cubs call up some of these relief pitchers especially, but then you see it with some position players too. They call them up and expect them to perform in their 2 weeks in Chicago on off the bus from Iowa, and if they don't perform in that 2 weeks, well, then it's over for them. And I don't think that's the way to go about developing your pitchers. And I think that's the first spot I see as a very clear chance to develop some in-house homegrown starting pitching.
Right, and I think you make a good point that in past years there was obviously the goal of, you know, winning the division, competing for the World Series, and performing at that top level. And, you know, they state that that's still the goal in 2021, but if you don't really have your foot on the gas pedal, that's not really what you're doing. And it just seems to me that in other years, you know, we've heard a lot, and I know you guys and someone like Brian Smith from Bleacher Nation, like, are frequently sort of sounding this alarm bell of, why are we signing a bunch of like 36-year-olds to give a shot in the bullpen or things like that, right? Instead of just trusting these young guys. And I think in past years, you know, maybe that makes a little more sense. But if you're doing, you know, gestures broadly at this, whatever the Cubs are doing right now, it just seems you might as well try and give these guys a shot and use this as a platform to these guys. And it's not a perfect example. All these guys have different careers and things like that. But, you know, someone like David Bodie comes to mind just as someone that the Cubs gave an opportunity to. He's performed, up and down a little bit, but the Cubs found themselves a cheaper depth piece that can play a few positions, and you don't get there if you only bring in a bunch of old veterans, right, like the Carlos Gonzalez's of the world, to constantly fill these spots. And in a year like 2021, with the way the Cubs are going, it just seems like you really ought to give these guys a fair shake, because then you have some answers, at least hopefully, even if it's only one or two, when you head into 2022 and 23. You've given these guys a shot, you know what you have, and you can kind of fill in some of those spots, hopefully, when the budget ticks back up.
With all due respect to Rex Brothers, what the hell are we doing? I mean, like, right. Like, you have Justin Steele sitting right there, and if you're giving innings to Rex Brothers and we sign Joe Weiland this offseason, if you're giving innings to those guys and not Justin Steele and Dakota Mekis, then why have Justin Steele and Dakota Mekis in AAA? Like, what are we doing with those guys if you're giving the innings to Matt Dermody? You know, I don't really get that thought process.
Between Tyson Miller and Corey Abbott, I look at Tyson Miller and just interrupt if I'm flat out wrong, but he getting a chance in 2020, more representative of his stuff, I think, compared to Corey Abbott. I mean, you look at the numbers in 2019, Tyson Miller was tearing up Tennessee, walk rate under 2 for almost 90 innings, gets the call to AAA, and his walk rate in almost 50 innings rockets up to almost 5. Corey Abbott, on the other hand, in Tennessee, 2019, K per 9 over 10, even better than Tyson Miller's, in a walk rate just a tad over 3. So I'm wondering why Corey Abbott did not even get a look last year. And this is not to say, hey, why, you know, Tyson Miller should not be. I think he should be getting looks too. But I'm wondering, like why does Corey Abbott get as much love in this system? If the numbers are there, you're talking about his tunneling, the cutter, like what are we missing, or what is this organization missing here?
I think with the Tyson Miller over Corey Abbott thing in 2020, my hope is that they are higher on, like, I guess I'm spin zoning this here a little bit, and I'm hoping that they're higher on Corey Abbott and they didn't want to just call him up for a couple games. I don't really have an explanation for that. I would say that with Corey Abbott and Tyson Miller, there's a lot of similarities between the two. They do allow more fly ball outs than you'd like to see, for sure. I think that Tyson Miller, with that, you mentioned his walk rate just kind of shot up once he made it up to Iowa. And I think a part of that was that when he was playing in the Pacific Coast League, the ball just flew out of ballparks there in the league. Like, mm-hmm. I had watching those games, a guy would just, like, flick his wrist at the ball, and it would clear the fence by, like, 30 feet. I'd never seen something like that in my entire life. And he might say otherwise, but watching him pitch and go from dominating at Tennessee to just allowing home runs like nobody's business at Iowa, my guess is he was trying to miss too many bats when he made his debut in Iowa. And because, like, he didn't want to allow as many home runs as he was. And so because that was happening, I think that he just missed the zone more than he should have. And it was a lot of nibbling, I guess. But, I guess to answer your question, I'd say that my hope is that they see more in Corey Abbott moving forward. But, there are a lot of similarities between the two guys, for sure.
And we'll see what happens in spring training. But if you were betting on between the two, who would get the first chance at a rotation, would it probably be Tyson Miller, just given he got the chance already in 2020?
I actually think probably Abbott. Really? I don't know that for sure. I'd probably say
just
Abbott.
A gut feeling.
I think that's my gut feeling, I guess. And I think I can see Tyson in the bullpen a little bit more. I don't think that they're going to convert him to a reliever or anything. I don't think that's happening. But I look at Corey Abbott, and it's just kind of like a bulldog mentality. And he's going to go out there and get you innings. And that's a guy that you're going to need in Chicago, a guy that can just go out there and if he has a rough couple first innings, which he didn't have many of in the minors, but I think he can blow his neck a little and go get you four more innings if you need him to, you know? And that's just kind of the mentality, very like John Lester type mentality, which you'd love to see.
Very high compliment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the mentality, I'm not saying the guy's John Lester, easy. But yeah, just like that mentality where it's like, hey, yeah, he might've given up a couple bombs, but he'll gut out some innings, get you through the sixth, and you need innings eaters like those, especially going into the 2021 season.
All right. So to finish here, Greg, and this is, you know, maybe a more abstract sort of question, and I don't expect you to have specific names or anything like that, but we continue to hear the rumors about guys like Wilson Contreras, guys like Chris Bryant, etc., and, you know, this sort of like overwhelming sense of dread, I guess, that the Cubs are not done with just moving Yu Darvish and Victor Caratini and non-tendering Kyle Schwarber, etc. So when you and I keep using the phrase because Jed used it, so it's just the easiest way for me to describe this. But if we're looking at everything through an eye on the future lens, and, you know, they've stated several different goals, and you know, it's hard to pinpoint them exactly. But if the goal, at least in part, of this offseason and maybe, you know, this trade deadline, you know, once we get to the end of 2021, if the goal is to have strengthened this system and, like Jed has said, have replenished this system with a pipeline of not only players that they can promote through their system to Wrigley Field, but also a pipeline that creates potential trade assets to, you know, instead of being the team trading away Yu Darvish, being the team acquiring players like him or Francisco Lindor, et cetera, in the future. So, again, not asking specifics or teams or anything like that, but can you put into perspective for us what you would like to see, even just in a general sense, for the Cubs to accomplish that? And I guess, put more simply, let's say the Cubs are trading Wilson Contreras. Can they, with the four guys that they got for Yu Darvish, with some of the young guys that are already in the system and based on their trajectory and projectability, can they actually accomplish these stated goals? Or when you look at what they got for Darvish, some of the rumored names or things like that, are you still looking at this going like, yeah, they can add an influx of talent to the system, but it's still going to have a bunch of holes or flaws or things like that? Like, can Jed Hoyer navigate a path that, again, whether it's the end of the offseason, the trade deadline, the end of 2021, whenever the end point of this is, where we all look back on this and, you know, maybe we don't agree with the decision to do all of this or how they got there or the exact moves, but where we all look back on this and go, you know what, this organization is legitimately in a better place in terms of, you know, the pipeline and the prospects and the minor league system than they were before. Can they achieve that effectively?
So I have a roundabout way to answer.
Sure,
it's sort of an unfair question, perhaps. So I think that when you look at this entire organization as a whole, from Chicago down to the Arizona Rookie League, you look at Chicago, and right now the team they have in Chicago is like okay. Right, it's as it stands now, they can compete for a division. They aren't going to win the World Series, but like it's okay, right? You look at the upper levels of the minors in Iowa and Tennessee. You have guys like Braylon Marquez and Miguel Amaya and Brennan Davis up there now. And as a whole, the upper levels of the minor are okay. Like they get the job done. They're not going to blow you away, but it's decent. The lower levels of the minors, you can say the exact same thing where it's not the best lower levels of the minors in all of the sport, but they've got some real names that can really take off, and it gets the job done. I think that exactly, the way that the system is currently built out, the organization is currently built out, and the way that Jed appears to be building that out even more, I think that it's a really good start. And I think that's why you see like the Cubs system ranked right now, like right smack dab in the middle. They're not a top 10 farm system. they're not a bottom third farm system. They're right in the middle of the pack. And I think that this system needs just time. They need games played. You look at Brennan Davis. He hasn't had a whole lot of games played as a pro, but he's going to be in Tennessee. You look at Ed Howard and now all these different prospects the Cubs got in the Yu Darvish trade. And in addition to those, the international free agents, Ronnie Quintero and Kevin Mata, the Cubs got. There's a lot of guys that just need time to develop, and their potential is there. And the organization from top to bottom is just like, it's close to being really good at all levels, but it's just not quite there yet. So to answer your question, I think that if the Cubs were to trade Wilson Contreras, if the Cubs were to trade Chris Bryant, what I'd love to see, I think one gap there is that's there is in Iowa right now, there's not a whole lot of bats that are ready for Chicago. That's why we were looking kind of like at Jake Cronenworth is a kind of extreme example.
I wanted him so badly.
Yeah, and I know Corey did, I'm sure.
And why is Michigan that, guy.
And because I know that getting a Michigan guy like Jake Cronenworth would have been great. And
this is not a Michigan related podcast. We're not going there.
I think that he's obviously a Chicago. He wouldn't have been an Iowa guy. But like guys that are almost ready for Chicago is something that in terms of the hitters is something that the system lacks a little bit. I mean, there's Trent Giambroni and Alfonso Rivas, but like that's about it in Iowa. PJ Higgins, but I think that's a gap right now. And then I think just having a couple more guys that fit like in the 6 to 10 range in the Cubs system. And I think that's why Jed Hoyer went after Preciado and Mania and Santana and Casey, because those guys could easily fill that like 6 to 10 range as far as Cubs prospects. So. Because right now the top of the system is really good. I mean, you have Brennan Davis and Miguel Amaya. We talked about these guys. They're very good at the top. And I think there's also a lot of depth in this system. Like back at like the 15 to 20 range, like 15 to like 30. Like that range is really decent. It's the like 6 to 15 that there's just a kind of a lot of people jumbled up, and some guys either can take off this year and surprise us, or the Cubs and Jed Hoyer can acquire some talent that really fills in that area and maybe potentially drops a guy like Cole Roederer down to number 10 in the system as far as rankings. And if you can get a guy like Cole Roederer at number 10, then that's a really good sign for your system. That means your system is really impressive. So a long-winded answer to your question, Corey, is that I think that the Cubs need time. And I think that acquiring either a talent close to Chicago, not necessarily super high potential, but a guy that's close to Chicago, and then just kind of filling out the rest of this system, I think can kind of go a long ways. Because the system as a whole is in a real decent shape.
So I'm not going to let you leave the podcast without asking you this question. Manny Rodriguez, the guy looks... He's a tank. Like the guy is huge. So I'm looking at him, and I was listening to your latest episode of the Growing Cubs podcast with Brian Smith, and you mentioned Craig Brooks. I'm looking at all these guys, and they have like K per nines over 12, dude.
Yeah.
And like, is it insane to think that this bullpen that we've been so conditioned to be suspect about, and all of these guys who we haven't heard come through the system, is it crazy to think that this bullpen, the potential for all these strikeouts and to fit into this modern day bullpen, is like just cooking right there and almost ready to go?
Dude, Craig Brooks is, I mean, now we're way down we keep diving into the system, but Craig Brooks is the strangest thing to me, because the dude has put up like a 35% strikeout rate plus the past like 5 years in the system.
I mean, it's wild.
Insane. Like, insane. And you'd never hear about Craig Brooks at all. He's so fun to watch. He's not a big dude. Like, he's a pretty small guy. He is one of my favorites to watch in the system. And, yeah, I guess just looking at Craig Brooks and Manny Rodriguez, and then you got Ben Hecht and Burles, I mean, a guy that's a higher name. But those guys, if they're putting up that amount of those amounts of strikeouts in the minor leagues, you'd think they could get you some strikeouts in Chicago. And giving those guys a chance, again, we talked about like the giving the guys in the rotation a chance, like Corey Abbott and Tyson Miller. How about you give Craig Brooks or Dakota Mekis? I mean, Dakota Mekis up until 2019 was lights out in the system, like incredible throughout his minor league career. And giving Craig Brooks and Dakota Mekis and Justin Steele and Ryan Lawler, I can keep going on these names, but they have just super impressive stuff. They strike out a lot of guys. Ryan Lawler, if you go, anybody out there listening, please go look up Ryan Lawler's stats because his stats in 2019 were absurd. He like struck out 38% of the batters he faced. He's got a mid to high 90s fastball. He's got a wipeout curveball. Really good stuff. And it's like, give him a chance in Chicago, man. Like, just I appreciate converting Jason Adam into the pitcher that he is today. I really, really enjoy watching pitchers come to Chicago and perform better because the Cubs development staff identified them with another organization. But look within your own organization and see some of these guys like Brooks and Lawler that are performing at extremely high levels right there at home for you.
I think that's all that we have. Perhaps more happens, and we have to bring you back on, Greg, to give us a breakdown of some young new names. I certainly expect that might be the case, for better or worse. But I think especially I'm glad to have had you clarify, like, on that last part, you know, because I think it's easy to hear Jed Hoyer talk about what the goals are and to, you know, read about these young guys that they get from the Padres. And, you know, for a lot of us, I mean, certainly, as always, when we talk prospects, I'm sort of speaking from the perspective of someone who, like, I know who Brennan Davis is. I can watch footage of him and have an opinion, but I don't have a strong working knowledge of every level of the system or every prospect that's in the Cubs system and things like that. So I think it was good to kind of hear your answer, just kind of on where the system is at and where this process in this offseason might get us, because I think it's easy for a lot of us to hear, well, we want to replenish the system and see a bunch of names and kind of look around and go, did that do it? You know, like, because there, you know, there's not like a clear answer on that, right? So I think it's just sort of good to have a little clarity on that, rather than just sort of throwing your arms up in the air going, I hope that, you know, this is doing what they're saying that they're trying to do or accomplishing these goals. But this was a good chat. I think it was informative. And at least while we're recording this podcast, we made it without, you know, anything in here becoming quickly outdated or in need of,
let's hurry up and hang up.
Yeah, correction. Right, we're gonna hang up. We're gonna get this published so that we can just wipe Thank our hands you. Clean of it if something happens. But before we sign off, Greg, as always, I know we've mentioned the pod throughout the show, but throw out any social media, any writing, anything you want to direct the audience to, your handles, where to find you, things like that.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Out of the Vines, and you can follow the podcast along at Growing Cubs Podcast. We have been releasing podcasts every other week, and somehow we've maintained that every other week schedule all throughout the 15-month hiatus of minor league baseball. I don't know how we've done it, but we just keep talking, which I guess that's fine. And you can also always find the writing. I've haven't had a whole lot to write about with no minor league baseball, but over at Cubs Insider, and recently, I guess, last week, dropped something about the Cubs prospects New Year's resolutions. So got to talk with Brennan Davis and Jack Patterson and DJ Artis and a few guys about what they want to see from themselves in this upcoming minor league baseball season. So that's always fun. So
and just to add to that too, like your guys' pod is so in the woods with like all these names. If you're into minor league baseball, like that is where you guys need to go. Also shout out to Jimmy Nelligan, your co-host.
Yeah.
Who we'll have on here, you know, hopefully soon.
Yeah.
You guys do a great job. And the most recent episode with you and Brian Smith of Bleacher Nation, you guys do this like reliever draft, which was pretty cool.
If you are a prospect nerd, then our most recent episode is the way to go.
It's awesome.
We talked about 30 Cubs reliever prospects, which that was even a little deep for me, which is saying something. So If you're into that nerdy stuff, then be sure to go give us a follow. And follow us. You can follow the podcast on Instagram, too. We're over there on Instagram at Growing Cubs Pod. So we're trying to get that off the ground a little bit, put some clips and stuff of our recordings, and give that a follow.
And there you have it, folks. So we are still awaiting the rest of the MLB offseason to unfold. As you may have noticed, things still moving at a small, slow pace. A lot of the big names, the big fish, still out there, even though I can say with as close to certainty as is allowed in this situation, none of that really matters for the Cubs unless teams that they might be trading with happen to sign better players. So pay attention to that at your own discretion. But as always, as I've been saying for a while, and as you guys know, having experienced this, stay ready, folks, because I don't think that Jed Hoyer is done. I know we all have, we don't have to get into this because we're at the end of the pod, but I was discussing with Brendan that, you know, when you read these rumors, I want what's best for the Cubs, but ultimately some of these guys getting traded, whether they're the better player or not, would affect me more than others. So it has been interesting kind of reading the rumors, and I have my preferences. Brendan has his preferences. I'm sure, Greg, you have your own. We all want what's best for the Cubs, but some of these guys getting moved would be legitimately heartbreaking for me, and, you know, versus others where I'm like, okay, I can just sort of get over this. But we'll see what happens, but I, again, would advise you, if your favorite players are on this team, they might not be in due time. So just prepare yourself emotionally, mentally, spiritually, whatever you need to do. And as always, we will get through this together. We'll talk about it together. We will analyze it together. And we were very glad to have Greg on today to give us a look at the future. This is the direction the Cubs are going. This is where their plan and their path is headed. So hopefully this provided a little bit of clarity, a little more understanding, a little more in-depth thought on the Cubs system, the direction of the system, and, you know, where all of this is headed, because that is where the Cubs organization itself is putting a lot of their emphasis as it stands in January of 2021. But as always, we thank you guys for joining us here on the Cubs Related Podcast. If there is breaking news that we need to discuss between now and, you know, next Monday morning, we will jump on and we will break all of that down. Otherwise, we will talk to you guys next week. And as always, thank you guys for listening. And we end by saying, go Cubs.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.